All right.
Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. All right.
Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of Trib Tower here until 5 a.m. That's our showtime now on Fridays. We are midnight to 5, keeping you company all night long with live radio until 5 a.m. You can join us by sending texts to 24720. You can also go to Facebook.com/Nick D Show and stay connected that way with over 8,600 other fans on our Facebook page, which is cool. And you can call us at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Okay, we've got a great show lined up for you tonight. We got our regular features coming up, Drunks in the News, brought to you by the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn. We also have a special event that's happening at the Gale Street Inn that I'm going to be a part of, and so is our friend Patty Vasquez, who you hear on WGN. She headlines a lot of comedy clubs. Really funny lady. We're going to co-host a night at Gale Street Inn on Tuesday, July 30th, and all the money's going to go to Autism Speaks. It's a dinner, it's drinks, and it's entertainment, and it's to raise awareness and money for Autism Speaks, all at the Gale Street Inn. We'll tell you more details on how you can reserve your tickets now for this great event on Tuesday, July 30th. So, Drunks in the News coming up, straight out of context. The Nick D Show, spies, and so many other things. And we will be here until 5 o'clock. We are going to get Paul DeRevere from Consequence of Sound is going to join us a little bit later on to give us coverage of Pitchfork. The big Pitchfork Festival is happening this weekend. So, we'll see how it went, you know, with the crazy weather that's happening tonight, to see how it went there. And to preview what's happening on Saturday and what's happening on Sunday for Pitchfork. So we'll talk about that as well. There's tons of other stuff coming up right here on WGN. But we always start the show off because it is midnight. It is Friday. And every Friday night here on WGN at midnight on the Nick DiGilio Show, it is the Midnight Movie Reviews. This is when we tell you all about the new movies, all about the movies that are available on demand, and everything that you can see movie-wise. If you have movie questions, reviews, or comments, now's the time to call us. It's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And Colin Suter, Eric Childress from eFilm Critic join me every Friday night starting at midnight, and we do a complete and extensive coverage of all the movies that you could possibly see every weekend. And let's start that right now, the Midnight Movie Reviews. Yes, once again it is midnight, once again it is Friday, and that means it's time for the Midnight Movie Reviews, where Eric and Colin and I tell you what we think of all the films that are available for you to see in movie theaters and on demand in the comfort of your own home, and we do it all to help you guys out so you can plan your weekend. Full reviews, lots of stuff to talk about tonight, and if you want to join us, it's 312-981-7200, and we welcome Colin. Hi, Colin.
Hello there.
And Eric. How you doing, Eric?
Okay, how you doing?
All right. So
good.
I jotted down a couple of the on-demand movies.
Okay,
Eric, were you? I know you're out of town.
Yeah.
And we don't have like the full on-demand list, but
right.
There didn't seem to be that many. I was looking at my Comcast Xfinity cable thing, and I only saw one new one besides Only God Forgives.
Okay.
Which we will get to later.
Oh, yeah.
Colin, did you see Only God Forgives?
No, I'm seeing it Sunday.
Uh-huh.
I'm very curious.
Yeah. anyway, that's available on demand, and it's also in at the Music Box, but we'll get to that in a little bit. But the only movie that I saw, Eric, and Colin, that I looked up online, and if you want to look it up, if you're near a computer and you want to look it up on your IMDb page, I looked it up and then I watched the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
It is a movie called this is available on your on demand. Besides the new Ryan Gosling film, Only God Forgives. The other movie that's available on demand this week that's new is called Saturday Morning Mystery.
Okay,
and here's what it says. Okay,
mm-hmm.
This is the summary of what it says. It says a dark and bloody parody about a Scooby-Doo-like team of paranormal investigators and their devoted dog. With the crew nearing bankruptcy, they're hired to get to the bottom of a series of spooky events at a remote Kaiser mansion, an old religious school plagued by rumors of Satanism and ritualistic murder. They're experts at debunking ghost stories, so they get right to work, and despite the ominous signs that it isn't just another greedy land developer or a bitter landlord, they set up to stay the night. When the sun goes down, the truth comes out, the place might actually be haunted by sadistic spirits or something much, much deadlier.
I hope they get to work faster than it took the time to read that synopsis.
Yeah.
My gosh.
And it's clear, I mean, obviously, it's clearly patterned, you know, after Scooby-Doo. There's a big dog and, you know, but they look like, it's like, now, Colin, are you looking at the page?
Yeah, I am. I'm just reading the one user review in here that, of course, is like 9 stars out of 10.
What?
Sure, it's not written by a relative.
Yeah.
I
watched the trailer for it, and it looks horrendous. I guess it's supposed to be a live-action satire of Scooby-Doo, but it looks to me like it's not played for laughs. Like it's played
really?
Yeah, like it's played seriously, and the trailer is like full of like like a lot of murder and a lot of blood and a lot of like screaming, and I don't think it's played for laughs. I mean, at least from what I can tell by looking at the trailer, they try to make a serious, scary horror film out of this premise.
Well, there is a there is a quote on here on the poster.
Uh-huh.
From Ambush Bug of Ain't It Cool News. Says it's Scooby-Doo meets the Evil Dead. I'm assuming they're meaning the remake of Evil Dead.
I would guess.
Okay.
Ambush,
from what you're saying.
Ambush Bug?
From Ain't It Cool News.
Okay, now I know that everybody on Ain't It Cool News has like a pseudonym, right, Eric?
Yes.
So they all like our buddy Steve is like, what is he, Capone?
Capone,
okay,
yeah.
All right. So now, do you know who Ambush, are you aware of who Ambush Bug is?
Can't say that I am.
Ambush Bug is a comic book. And I know this because, like, in the early 80s, we became kind of obsessed with it. Or, I should say the mid-80s, my friends and I became kind of obsessed with it. Because of, this is going to be weird. This is a stretch, so bear with me on this. We became obsessed with it because we all went to go see Desperately Seeking Susan.
Okay.
Trust me, it ends up making sense. And in you guys remember Desperately Seeking Susan, correct?
Sure.
Okay. There was that crazy, like, dyed blonde-haired guy who was following Madonna around trying to get her.
Played by Will Patton.
It was Will Patton, exactly. Okay, yeah. So Will Patton. There's one scene in the movie where he's just kind of, he's trying to spy on Madonna, and he's sitting like, I can't remember if he's sitting in a beauty salon or he's sitting somewhere, and he's trying to look at her, but he's trying to distract everyone that he's reading something. And what he's reading is a copy of Ambush Bug, okay? And when we saw that, we saw the cover of this comic book, we just started laughing our asses off, my friends and I. We were like, what the hell is Ambush Bug? And we thought it was fake, like they made it up for the movie or something.
Yeah.
And I don't know, the cover just thought, I thought it was hilarious. So we looked for it. We went to the comic book store, and evidently there's a bunch of, there's like a ton of Ambush Bug comics. And so we became fans of Ambush Bug. So the fact that this guy is using Ambush Bug on Ain't It Cool News, that's pretty funny. So there you go. So if you're watching,
well, maybe,
if at
yeah,
some point, if,
it, word for it.
Yeah, if at some point you go back and you watch Desperately Seeking Susan, look for Will Patton reading Ambush Bug. It's a pretty memorable image. It stayed with me for almost 30 years. So there you go. All right. Okay. We got to get started here on the movies. That's it for the On Demand, as far as I know. Saturday Morning Mystery, and the other one is Only God Forgives, which we'll get to in a little bit. Now, Eric, did you see RIPD?
I did not.
Okay. Neither did I. So here's the deal. We're going to take a quick break. Colin, it's all yours when we get back, okay?
Okay.
All right. So we are going to talk about RIPD, which is the new movie with Ryan Reynolds and Jeff Bridges, and tons of other movies to talk about. If you've seen anything, you got reviews of your own, you got comments, you got questions, it's the Midnight Movie Reviews. We're talking movies, and we'll be talking about it. We're going to cover all the movies that you can see in the theaters as well. And the phone number is 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for your movie questions during the Midnight Movie Reviews. Yes, it's Nick DiGilio on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN Live in the Allstate Studio on the seventh floor of the Trib Tower overlooking beautiful Michigan Avenue, where, by the way, at about an hour ago, it looked like the end of the world out here with the crazy storms. But nothing now. Quiet, calm, no rain. Looking pretty good out there. We are here now. It's midnight on Friday. It's after midnight, so that means it's time for the Midnight Movie Reviews. Colin Suter from eFilmCritic.com and Eric Childress from eFilmCritic.com always join me every Friday night at midnight to talk movies. The phone number, if you want to join us with comments, questions, or reviews of your own, is 312-981-7200. Let's continue the movie reviews. All right, Colin and Eric, welcome back, gentlemen.
Hello. Hello there.
All right. So, Colin.
Yep.
RIPD. I believe this might be the first Jeff Bridges movie that I have not seen before the day it opened.
Wow.
Yeah, this might okay. Or on the day it opened. I mean, this might go down in history as the only Jeff Bridges movie I didn't see by the day it opened.
All right. Well, let me tell you why. This is a sci-fi comedy about a cop played by Ryan Reynolds who is partnered up with Kevin Bacon. Jeff Bridges comes later.
Yeah.
At the start of the movie, he's partnered up with Kevin Bacon. They're both cops, sort of on the wrong side of the law, and are involved in a scheme involving the stealing of gold. And because of this, Ryan Reynolds is killed in the line of duty. His soul is immediately taken into an afterlife in which he is recruited to work for the RIPD, which is the Rest in Peace Department. Which hires cops to go back to the streets and hunt down what are called deados, which are, prisoners, dead prisoners, who escaped from the journey to hell. The goal that, Ryan Reynolds and Kevin Bacon happened upon figures into a bigger story here of all the deados being released onto the earth and creating a worldwide apocalypse if these gold pieces are put together. Anyway, Reynolds is teamed up with Jeff Bridges, who is an old-fashioned lawman from the Civil War era and who's been doing this sort of thing for well over 100 years, and he's sort of the Tommy Lee Jones character to the Ryan Reynolds with Will Smith rookie character. And this movie definitely aspires to be the next Men in Black, kind of a big, goofy special effects comedy with buddy cop elements thrown in, mixed in with some Ghostbusters. Unfortunately, it's more this generation's Dead Heat. It's that kind of movie where the comedy is constantly bugging its eyes out at you. Bigger and louder equals funnier. Every visual punchline is underscored with like a quick zoom in and goofy sound effect. It's loud, grating, and obnoxious. The special effects are the poorest I've seen from a major movie studio. I mean, really just bad. Really half-assed, really rushed just to make a deadline, but without any heart or commitment. Reynolds looks completely lost. And Jeff Bridges, you know, God bless him for committing to every role he's ever been given. And he's committed here, definitely, to this role. But he is wasting his talent big time. And Kevin Bacon is just embarrassing. No surprise that this is from the director of the first Red movie. And boy, does this guy suck. This is one of the worst films of the year, without question. So definitely not a recommendation.
You know, I'm looking at this guy, the director's credits, and I actually like two of his movies. I don't like Red. I think Red is bad. Isn't that weird that this movie's coming out the same day as Red 2? That's kind of strange.
Yeah.
Kind of, I don't know, is that ironic, Alanis Morissette, or no?
That's a coincidence.
Maybe in her world.
A coincidence, yeah.
Yeah.
But he directed two movies that I like, but I guess they're guilty pleasures of mine. Because he directed The Time Traveler's Wife, which I liked.
I can't believe that.
I do. I liked that movie.
Yeah. Oh.
And he directed Flight Plan, which I liked. So, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I don't know. His style of action and comedy is just, I cannot understand why this guy has a career.
Well, the other two movies that I mentioned, the ones that I liked, aren't even, there's no comedy in either of them. I mean, you know, like,
right.
You know, I mean, so maybe he shouldn't do comedy because Red sucked. So maybe he just shouldn't do comedy. All right. This, by the way, is based, of course, on a graphic novel. Are you aware of this?
Yeah.
Yeah. I had no idea.
Again, I'm aware of it.
It's another comic book movie. I didn't know that. So there you go. I just, you know.
I just kept thinking when I was watching it, like, you know, those, we just talked about one, those on-demand movies that we talk about every week that, you know, the few that we talk about that none of us will probably ever see, but we talk about them anyway, like the one we talked about tonight.
Yeah.
This is what I imagine all those movies would be like.
Oh, that's terrible. I just, you know, because I mean, you know how much I love Jeff Bridges, man. I mean, this.
Of course, this, we all do.
Oh, all right. Okay.
Well, let's not forget, he was also in Tideland.
Yeah. Well, yes, he was.
You know.
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
Well, at least that was at least, you know.
That's awful.
I mean,
Tideland is awful.
Yes, it is. Tideland's an awful movie, but not for lack of originality or trying. You know what I mean? Like this one.
This was just as painful to sit through.
Okay. All right. Wow. Ooh. Well, you actually went negative on a Terry Gilliam movie. Wow.
I know. It happened.
I know.
It happened.
All right. Okay, everybody, hang on. Eric and Colin, we're reviewing the new movies, and Colin says, really, really horrible, one of the worst movies of the year. Stay away from R.I.P.D. with Ryan Reynolds and the great Jeff Bridges. Nick DiGilio here, live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of the Trib Tower here on WGN. It is the Friday night show, Nick DiGilio show, and our show times now, midnight to 5 a.m. We are with you live all night long, keeping you company throughout the night. Jot down these numbers, 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in and join us anytime. Send your texts to 24720 or check us out at facebook.com/Nick D Show. It's after midnight. It's on Friday. That means it's time for the Midnight Movie Reviews with Colin and Eric, and we get back to the reviews. Here's Colin and here's Eric. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Okay, why don't you guys handle – I did not see This is Martin Bonner, so Eric, why don't you tell us about it and you guys can review it.
Okay, this is a film that premiered at Sundance this year and actually was also part of our Chicago Critics Film Festival. It's a film about a gentleman who sort of becomes sort of a surrogate towards recently released inmates and whatnot. So there's a new inmate who is released under parole, and it sort of, you know, he helps him along to get set up in his, you know, his new life, possibly, you know, to find a new job and whatnot. And, you know, they sort of form this friendship between each other. The recently released inmate who just gets out is looking to hopefully get back in touch with his daughter, who he has not seen since he went inside. And it's this very subtle and kind of remarkable little character piece, just, you know, involving these two guys and their sort of, you know, how they sort of deal with these positions in life that they found themselves in. The one who plays the surrogate is, you know, he's a little bit older. The other guy is now released from prison, now in middle age. And it's just this really nice, very well acted story with this sort of a remarkable third act scene that sort of that involves the two of them meeting the daughter on this scene in the diner. It's nothing, you know, it's really kind of a hard movie to sort of put into terms of a traditional plot. But this doesn't really have any major stars in the film. I didn't recognize any of the actors in the film, actually. Colin, maybe you have the names in front of you.
I have the main character's name I have here. Yeah, Paul Einhorn. And I looked him up, and I haven't. Yeah, and I haven't seen him. He's been in a lot of short films. He's done a lot of television work, but this is the first time I've ever seen him.
Yeah, I'm looking at the cast list on IMDb, and I don't recognize a single name.
Yeah. And it's one of these things that, you know, it almost seems like it almost could be like a documentary in a way. But like I said, I mean, the performances are incredibly strong. It's a really really well-written piece. And like I said, it's like 80 minutes long. It, you know, it comes and it goes, but it kind of sticks with you after it's all over.
Okay. This is Martin Bonner. And what do you think, Colin?
I love this movie. I think if you were to watch this movie and not know who directed it, and you had to make a guess, your first guess would be Tom McCarthy, the guy who did Station Agent and Win-Win.
Sure.
It's like Eric said, it's a very interesting, low-key involving character study of people who would not normally seem, you know, like an interesting subject for a film. And yet these characters, I found them more interesting than most characters in mainstream movies today. You know, they have flaws, they have, you know, goodness, and they're trying to do the right thing, but sometimes they're surrounded by people who don't make it easy. The no-name cast here is fantastic. The director, the writer-director, Chad Hartigan, who made a little movie called Chad and Bree Are on a First Date, which I didn't find very memorable. I think he excels here. There's not a single misdirected moment in this film. It really took me by surprise. I was really just felt deeply involved with it, and I think it's one of the year's best.
Wow, that's great. I love these kind of movies too. You know what I mean? Everything that you guys described about this just is definitely in my wheelhouse. It's playing at Facets, by the way, if you are interested in seeing it. The Saturday Showtime.
Yeah, probably won't get beyond that, which is unfortunate, but definitely worth speaking out.
Facets.
It hits DVD on August 20th,
okay.
As a matter of fact.
It'll be out on DVD August 20th, but if you want to come out to the theaters, if you're in the city, 1517 West Fullerton, that's Fullerton near Ashland. Facet Cinematheque, and it tomorrow's showtimes, or I should say maybe later today, Saturday showtimes, are 3, 5, 7, and 9. 3, 5, 7, and 9. It's called This is Martin Bonner. And that sounds great. That sounds like a terrific way to see, to spend 84 minutes or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
Yeah.
All right, cool. All right, Colin, I believe you're the only one who has seen Turbo.
Okay.
All right. So, Colin, go ahead and tell us about Turbo.
All right. Well, this is this week's animated offering. It's from DreamWorks, and it's about a snail named Theo, and he is voiced by Ryan Reynolds. Here we go again. And he is obsessed with the Indy 500. He likes to watch the Indy 500 on TV in the house where he and his snail friends reside in the garden, you know, where they kind of do factory work in the garden. He has dreams like he wants to race in the Indy 500, but of course he's a snail and all his friends tell him he's crazy and he's kind of an outcast. And his brother is voiced by Paul Giamatti, who is, you know, the constant skeptic in this film.
through a series of freakish and hard to describe events, one night Theo winds up in the gears of an actual car and ingests every fluid he possibly can while, you know, making that journey through the exhaust pipe or whatever. And next thing you know, he's a car. He can do everything a car can do. He has headlights for eyes. He has, you know, a little alarm. He, you know, can race at 90 miles an hour if he wants to, or 200 miles an hour, actually. Him and his brother wind up through another series of events I can't really describe. Wind up at this taco stand in Van Nuys, California, where one of the owners happens to be, whose hobby happens to be racing snails, just little snails. And I guess he has little tournaments behind the taco stand with him and his friends, and they bet and race snails, not fast ones like Turbo, but, you know. But then Turbo shows up and he's like an actual racing snail. And so now there's a plan, you know, to try and get him actually to race in the Indy 500. The co-owner is a guy named Tito, played by Michael Pena, and his brother, Angelo, played by Louis Guzman. They also have kind of a brother relationship that is parallel to the two snails. One's a skeptic, the other's a dreamer. This movie borrows, you know, pretty liberally from the Pixar playbook in terms of, you know, the characters and the situations and the storyline. But it borrows the good stuff from Pixar, not the stuff that Pixar has been putting out lately. This is actually a surprisingly very funny and entertaining little movie, if you can forgive a lot of the story flaws in it. For instance, there's not really an antagonist here. Everything happens pretty agreeably. And the character that ends up driving the story is actually Tito and not Turbo. So we don't really have much of a nemesis here until, you know, towards the end of the third act, when we actually see the race. Still, it is beautifully animated, of course. DreamWorks has, you know, every number of great animators, just like Pixar does. The racing scenes are actually pretty exciting to watch. And the characters are funny. A lot of the situations are pretty funny. There's some stuff involving crows that made me laugh out loud. It's not a masterpiece by any stretch, but as far as the animated offerings are going this year, and I still haven't seen The Croods yet, which some people like, this is actually the best animated film of the year so far, which is faint praise. It's a 3-star movie, but still, I'll take it. And yeah, I actually recommend it.
Now, did you notice who one of the writing credits is on this?
I did not.
Robert Siegel, who wrote The Wrestler and wrote and directed Big Fan. Who used to write for The Onion in Chicago.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So he wrote The Wrestler, he wrote and directed Big Fan. I don't know what the hell, if that sensibility shows up anywhere in Turbo, I don't know.
three sports movies.
Turbo sports movies.
Go ahead, Colin.
I guess Turbo is a big fan of one of the particular Indy 500 racers, so there's that element, I suppose.
It's just an odd credit. It's just an odd credit to see.
Credit. Well, good for him.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a good writer, too. I mean, you know.
Yeah, he's versatile.
Yeah, no question. I have to say that I really, you know, I've not seen this. I'm interested in seeing it. I'll probably wait, you know, until it comes on DVD or it hits the Bruin View. I really, I got to say, I love the poster. The tagline on the poster?
He's fast, they're furious.
Yeah. I thought that was, like, really clever. I thought that was great. He's fast, they're furious. That's funny.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So,
they're not really furious, though.
No, they're not. Okay. But, well, it's great. Hey, man, you got to, you know what, man? You want to piggyback on the biggest movie of the summer so far. You know what I mean? So.
Not a bad one to piggyback
Exactly. Hey, by the way, speaking of big movies, I went Monday night, and you guys already know this because I texted you.
Oh, yeah.
I went Monday night to see Pacific Rim. I loved it. I thought it was a blast, and I thought it was You know, and I know it comes down to this, Eric. You just don't like Del Toro.
That's not true.
I think it's true because this is a full-on Guillermo del Toro movie. It's got that weird – there's a lot of weirdness to it. It's got this weird sense of humor. The point of view of the movie is a lot different than the kind of point of view that you get from these kind of big, you know, Michael Bay-inspired action epics. I saw it – I don't know if this makes a difference, you guys, but I did see it in IMAX 3D. But I saw it at the Village Crossing in Skokie, and their IMAX theater is 80,000 times better than Navy Pier.
So in what way?
In every way. Comfort in it's not the screen is not as, you know, humongous. The projection is fantastic. I thought it looked great in 3D, and I'm not a big 3D guy at all. But this was beautifully projected. The images popped off the screen. It was not dark in any way. The sound was perfect, and at Navy Pier, their bass level on the sound is way too heavy. Eric, you were there when we saw the Dark Knight.
Yes.
And during that last, you know, a pretty important monologue that Gary Oldman has at the end of that movie, I couldn't hear it.
No, well, nobody could. They had to rescreen the movie.
That's what I'm saying. That's the kind of projection that sometimes you get when you go to Navy Pier.
Right.
When I saw the Mission Impossible movie at the Navy Pier, the last one where he's climbing on buildings, there were like some really big, gigantic hairs on the screen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the projection is just inconsistent. The sound is not good. I'm telling you right now, if you're going to see a movie in IMAX, I haven't been to all of them, but I can tell you right now that the Village Crossing Theater in Skokie has a fantastic IMAX screen, and it looked great. I had a blast at Pacific Rim. We went with like five of us went, and we all had a really good time. And I thought it was great. I thought it was a loving salute to those movies that I grew up with, and I thought it had Del Toro's stamp all over it. And I really loved it. So, Colin, I know you liked it. You didn't love it, but
yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun. So there you go. All right. Well, you guys, hang on. We got some more movies to talk about. And if you want to jump in here, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And nobody's really going to see Pacific Rim, but I highly recommend it. I think it's one of the most fun times I've had in a movie theater all summer, for sure. So, all right, quick break. We'll come back. Midnight Movies continue. It's Colin and Eric and me and you, 312-981-7200, or send your text to 24720 or facebook.com/Nick D Show. Nick DiGilio here live every Friday night into Saturday morning at 5 a.m. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. And we are reviewing the new movies, and it is the Midnight Movie Reviews right here with Colin and Eric from eFilmCritic.com. And we welcome the guys back. Welcome, guys.
Hello.
All righty then. Let's talk about Eric. Why don't you, Colin, you did not see Girl Most Likely, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Eric, tell us about Girl Most Likely.
Okay, well, this is a film starring Kristen Wiig. It premiered at the Toronto Film Festival last year under the title Emmagene. That is the name of the character that Kristen Wiig plays. And she's sort of an aspiring playwright, was kind of on the verge of becoming a success, but instead suffers a nervous breakdown. And she winds up in the hospital. And the hospital, the doctors will now release her under her own care. So the first person that they're able to get in touch with is her mother, played by Annette Bening, who is no less crazy than she is. So Kristen Wiig's character has to move back in with her mother and her nutty brother and a young male who is now taking up residence in her room, played by, I believe it was Darren Criss from Glee. Is that his name?
Yep.
Darren Criss?
Yep, correct.
Okay. And also her mother's new boyfriend, played by Matt Dillon, who may be a spy, like Arnold Schwarzenegger in True Lies, or he might be a spy like Bill Paxton in True Lies. We're not quite sure. So it's this sort of this one of these weird, wacky, you know, comedies where the person has to go back to her home to figure things out, even though, you know, she's in middle age and everyone around her is wacky and crazy and got their own little quirks going on and whatnot, as she can sort of figures her way back into
the life that she wants to leave. The film was directed by the couple, the pair that really hit a home run with American Splendor many years ago, but since then have been on a downward spiral in a lot of sitcom, really bad sitcom-y type features. And this is no exception and may just be the worst of the bunch. This is just an insufferable film where all of the characters are all kind of acting the same. The Kristen Wiig is, every once in a while she gets kind of a zinger in, whatnot, though she didn't write the film. So do not mistake this for Bridesmaids whatsoever. I don't know what Annette Bening's doing here. It seems like this is the kind of role that Diane Keaton has been playing for about two decades now. I don't know. I hated this movie so much. In a couple weeks, there's another movie coming out with kind of a similar premise involving a woman that has to move back into with a relative as her life sort of spirals out of control. Done with a lot more interesting manner. We'll talk about that in a couple of weeks. But this one I absolutely hated.
I didn't hate it, but it's not very good. There are things about it that I like. I think Matt Dillon's very funny in it. Kristen Wiig is really charming. She doesn't have a lot to work with in this. But it's Quirk Village. Like, this whole movie is just, yeah. It's one of those stereotypical quirky independent movies that really wears out its welcome pretty quickly, but I think is more watchable because of the cast. There are some really likable people in this movie, and I actually thought Annette Bening was okay in it. I mean, it's an over the top performance, but she's a diva and she can pull that kind of stuff off. And I actually thought that it was believable that they could be mother and daughter. I bought that. Overall, this is it's not very good. I didn't hate it. I wouldn't recommend it, but I definitely didn't hate it. I thought there were moments of it that were entertaining, and it's a very likable cast. But I would not recommend it. It's a big disappointment. And you're absolutely right about what these directors have done since American Splendor, because American Splendor is a truly great film.
Yep.
And they've done some really, that.
What else have they done besides Nanny Diaries?
There's
something else.
They did this. The Nanny Diaries. They did that movie with Kevin Kline and Paul Dano.
The Extra Man.
Yeah, which was terrible.
Yeah.
But they also directed the HBO movie Cinema Verite.
They never got through.
Which was
shut it off.
Yeah, which wasn't great. And so yeah. I mean, out of the gate, when you make something like American Splendor, obviously you're setting the bar really high for yourself because it's such a terrific
yep.
movie, and they really haven't come even. Anywhere close to that.
No, they haven't.
No. So it's a very, very disappointing movie. And again, everybody loves Kristen Wiig. We all love her. And we all root for her. This was just not a really great part for her to play.
No.
She does the best she can with it because she's so damn charming and cute and talented. But, a big disappointment on pretty much every level. All right, you guys, hang on. We got Colin, we got Eric, and we got more movies to talk about. And we got you, too. 312-981-7200. Send your text to 24720. The Midnight Movie Reviews continue. The news is coming up next, and we got more movies to talk about right here on WGN. The regular features will continue. Drunks in the News, Straight Out of Context, Nick D. Show Spies. We will also get a report on Pitchfork and a preview on the next 2 days of the Pitchfork Music Festival. That's all coming up live here on WGN until 5 a.m. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN, live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Our phone number is 312-981-7200, and if you would like to join us via text, send your text to 24720. Colin and Eric are here, and we're in the middle of the Midnight Movie Reviews. Lots of stuff to talk about this week. All right, Eric, why don't you tell us about Only God Forgives?
Okay. This is the latest film from Nicholas Winding Refn, whose last film was the very critically acclaimed Drive. And this film is set in Bangkok, where, again, he has Ryan Gosling on hand as a sort of a seedy sort of, he sort of manages fighters in Bangkok with his brother. And when his brother is killed after committing a pretty heinous act at the hands of the sort of the local police inspector who likes to dispense justice with a samurai sword, his mother, Ryan Gosling's mother, comes to town to claim the body. And she's played by Kristen Scott Thomas. And she's got greater plans on her mind, too. Not only is she a horrible person in her own right, an incredible racist, and might just be the sort of the brains behind the entire family operation. But she's looking for swift justice for her son's death. And if her son, Gosling, is not going to take action, then God bless it, she's going to find a way to do it herself. This is the kind of film made for people who thought Drive was too mainstream for them. This is a film that I remember when Colin talked about Drive, well, he kind of liked it, and you and I were both kind of raving about it. The term style over substance came up quite frequently. That could easily be the title of this movie. This is all style. This is all cinematography. This is all depravity sort of masquerading as art. And in some respect, it's kind of interesting to see just how far and how committed Refn is to doing sparse dialogue intercut with some really, really heinous acts and horrible people. And Colin, you know, when he talked about Turbo, said, you know, it was a film with no antagonist. Well, he could have easily picked one from this movie to be in Turbo, because there is not a single redeemable person in the film. As a matter of fact, I mean, the police inspector may be the most rootable person in the entire film, if there is such a thing. Obviously, this is not Drive. This is a film that was pretty reviled at Cannes, and you can easily see why. I didn't hate the film, again, because, I mean, there's the cinematography and just the absolute commitment to this weirdo style that he that Refn goes for in the film kind of washed over me, and I started laughing at it more than I was sort of horrified by it. So I can't quite recommend it, but it was more interesting to me than probably to a lot of people.
Oh, I hated this movie.
Yeah.
Oh my God, did I hate this movie? And I was, you know, I got home from work Friday morning, you know, because I was mm-hmm. filling in for Bill. Got home from work around 6:30. And I didn't realize that it was on demand. I was checking the on demand for tonight's show to see mm-hmm. what the movies were, and I was making a list, and I was like, oh my God, it's on demand. I immediately watch it, and I couldn't believe how much I hated it. It's style over substance, but I don't even think there's much style here. I mean, it's flashy looking, you know, but no, there's no con. The only thing about this movie that's even remotely interesting and is Kristen Scott Thomas, who mm-hmm. I've gotten to the point where I was really, really tired of Kristen Scott Thomas being French and depressed in every movie.
Yes.
You know
yes.
what I mean? And it's
totally
I really like Kristen Scott Thomas a lot, you know, but I was like, is she going to be French and depressed in every movie? And she really, you know, like blows that out of the water in this thing. I mean,
oh yeah, oh yeah.
So she's kind of fun to watch, and she wraps her mouth around some insane dialogue in this movie, and she,
oh yeah,
she looks nuts. You know, I didn't even, you know, I mean, I wouldn't have if I didn't know it was her, I wouldn't have been able to recognize her for the first couple of scenes mm-hmm. that she's in. Gosling, what has he got? Six lines in this movie?
I
hated it, and I wasn't offended by it because it's a brutal film,
right?
I wasn't like, oh God, I hate it because it's so violent or because there's nothing here. There's nothing going on. It is
no, there isn't.
It's insanely pretentious. This is a guy. This is a director who, you know, and I really like Drive a lot, as you mm-hmm. guys know. But this is at least from this movie, and I like Bronson a lot as well. I wasn't a big Valhalla guy, but I liked Bronson a lot. So, yeah. You know, I think this guy's got something. He's got some talent. I really enjoyed Drive, but, everything that people could have said, like, Colin, all the stuff that you had mentioned when you reviewed Drive, Colin, about how, you know, it's kind of hollow and it's just, you know, it's got this, you know, stylistic bent to it, and that's kind of
It's cool. It's cool, but it's nothing more than that.
Well, that whatever you thought of that stuff, that's all that Only God Forgives is. Except there's not. There's nothing going on in this movie except really slickly photographed ultra violence and really repulsive characters. And on top of that, the biggest sin, Eric, for me of this movie was it was unbelievably boring. I mean, it is dull. I mean, it's just like how many long shots of, I mean, like everything is cavernous and lit and it's quiet and everybody takes 10 minutes to move. I was like, what the hell am I watching here?
Well, so, Terrence Malick movie. Yeah.
Oh,
there it is.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Anyway, so Only God Forgives is, I think, an excruciating film. Kristen Scott Thomas. Fun to watch in it. I would not recommend that anybody see it just because of that. But it was nice to see her break out of the I'm a sad French woman mode.
So, yes.
Yeah. All right. So there you go. All right. Colin, tell us about Fruitvale Station.
All right. Well, this is a true story about a guy named Oscar Grant. Maybe you know this story. Maybe you don't. I didn't. Or if I did, I forgot it. And it's a true story of a tragic incident that happened about 4.5 years ago in California on New Year's Eve, 2008. But this film is really about this guy, and it follows him on this day, this New Year's Eve, which also happens to be his mother's birthday. His mother is played by Octavia Spencer from The Help. He spends the day running errands for the party, trying to get his job back at the food market, trying to start New Year's resolutions by no longer being a drug dealer. He wants to spend more time with his 7-year-old daughter and trying to convince his – I wasn't sure if it was his wife or his girlfriend, but anyway, they have the kid together.
It's his girlfriend.
Okay. And he's trying to convince her that he's on the straight and narrow. And because Oscar is a flawed guy. There's no question. The movie flashbacks to his days in prison. And, you know, he doesn't always make the best decisions when it comes to the important things in life. He's not a great human being, but he's a loving father. And you get the sense that he's making enough of an effort that, well, he seems to be living an insignificant life. He does have friends and family members who watch out for him. And then evening falls and he heads out with those friends, and that's where I'm going to stop for people who don't actually know the story but who want to see the film. This is a great movie in many ways, but also a frustrating one for me. I mean, I think the performances are flawless. Michael B. Jordan, who people might know from The Wire, Friday Night Lights, and last year's movie The Chronicle, he's marvelous. He really creates a fully defined character who's really trying, but, you know, is his own worst enemy. Octavia Spencer is first rate, as she always is, I think. The film, in the moment, I think is riveting and an interesting character study, you know, about a guy who is, you know, he's sort of like at the halfway point of a traditional character arc that has to do with redemption. The frustrating part, I thought, for me was by the end, I wasn't sure what the overall takeaway was with this film. I felt like I was on a journey with a guy whose, you know, life seemed to be going nowhere, but he had, you know, people around him looking after him. But by the end, I felt like the director, Ryan Coogler, who's making his feature debut with this film, was trying to make a less interesting point about bad things happening to good people, and there's still, you know, racist cops in L.A. or, you know, wherever this was. I do recommend the film because there are a lot of strong things about it, namely the performances. But the more I thought about it afterwards, I realized the overall intent of the movie wasn't clear, and that kind of frustrated me a little bit. So a mixed review, but mixed positive.
Okay. Eric?
Yeah, I reviewed this film out of Sundance, and I had very much the same reaction that Colin did. I mean, it's a film that, in the moment, you know, watching the performances and watching the sort of, you know, if you, for lack of a better term, sort of the manipulation of the story, that you're sort of, you know, you're right in the center of this guy's life and his experiences, and you see a lot of the good things that he does along with a lot of the frustrating things, you know, regarding his temper and whatnot, and what we know about his past in jail. You know, all that stuff works, even up to the ending, you know, when we get to, you know, the resolution of everything, you know, all that sort of, you know, you sort of walk away going to like, you know, like, damn it, you know, it's like one of those types of things. But because the movie sort of begins with sort of with like cell phone footage of the actual event, and then it closes with some rallies that took place just recently before the Sundance premiere, as a matter of fact, that they stuck into the film, that I really wish that the film had actually been a documentary. I really wish that as a true story and a story that has, you know, a lot of different ways to be explored, that we got to sort of know the people around this guy and hear their, you know, the story from their voices, to hear, you know, I mean, even I wanted to hear, you know, the story from the cops, you know, and the stuff that went down that night. And, you know, I mean, this movie, you know, it premiered at Sundance, but now it's opening, you know, it opened last week in New York and L.A., and it opened here in Chicago this week, you know, right in the center of this whole Zimmerman thing and whatnot. It's really sort of fortunate or unfortunate timing.
It reminds me a lot of what happened when the China Syndrome came out. And I know you guys are young, but that, I don't know if you guys remember, but China Syndrome came out a week before 3 Mile Island.
Well, you could say this, and I mean, for us, it was probably Space Camp.
Right, Space Camp, came out like right after the space shuttle. Yeah.
So I think, you know, that's, it's probably going to give the film even maybe a little more emotional weight that it deserves, because there's, you know, there's very similar stuff going on in this film. And, you know, as a fictional narrative, you know, semi-fictional narrative that the film sort of takes, you know, these coincidences that happen throughout the day. You know, we want to know about, you know, did the mother, you know, tell him to take the train, you know, that night? That's probably true. But then who he meets on the train, you know, did all of that go down exactly the same way?
Right.
I'm right with Colin on this, is that this is a film that I recommend for mainly the performances. And it's a film that does work in the moment. But afterwards, I'd like to know a lot. I immediately wanted to know more about the story.
You know, this is incredible. We should have just did one review, because that's exactly how I feel about the movie too. But I'm recommending it because of the performances. You know, this Melanie Diaz is really terrific in this movie. Nobody has mentioned her yet. She's really, really terrific in this movie. And I remember one of my favorite comedies of the past like 7-8 years is one that nobody else really likes, but it's Hamlet 2. And she's in Hamlet, too. And she's great in it. And I just remember when I saw her on the screen, I was like, hey, she's from Hamlet, too. And I'm sure I'm the only person in the theater that even knew that. Tavia Spencer, she's a terrific actress. She's great in this. I got to tell you, though, Michael B. Jordan, who, by the way, I can refer to as Michael because that's the character he played in The Wire. And you know how I call all the actors who were in The Wire by their character's name, so I can call him Michael and still call him by his real name. This kid's terrific, man. He's a great actor. He was phenomenal on The Wire. He was great in Friday Night Lights. And I just think this kid is great. And I think he really carries the movie. And again, huge questions about how accurate the story is. Eric, you brought that whole thing up. Like, how do we know this happened? How do we know that happened? I know that I'm sure they did some research. You know, I think this Coogler guy's got a, you know, he's got a definite future. This is his, he's made a really decent, I think, film debut here, a directorial debut. He certainly has a way with actors. You know what I mean? We know that this guy can direct actors. That's for sure. But I echo everything you guys said. I'm recommending it. I think it's being overpraised, you know. Maybe it's simply because of the times, you know what I mean? Maybe it's simply because of what's going on in the world right now. But it is, I think it's compelling enough because of the performances. So,
yeah.
And obviously it's a tragic story. So, But anyway.
It was an easy film to praise out of Sundance. You know, you get, you know, a number of, sure. you get a lot of white films out of Sundance, let's be honest.
Yeah.
You know, to get a film that has, you know, performances like that, that has, you know, an African-American slant to it,
yeah.
It's a very easy film to sort of pick out in a crowd
right.
and to, you know, be very overgenerous with sometimes.
Yeah, and it's one of those deals where, you know, like this movie could sweep up an entire audience. It could be a really interesting,
mm-hmm.
I mean, the audience that I saw it with, you could feel that everybody was getting, you know, was going for the ride. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was working.
Yeah.
You could feel there was a vibe in the audience that we were all going through this story together. And there, you know, a lot of people know how the story ends. Well, you know how the story ends, you know, at the beginning. And yet it kind of, there are moments in the movie, not quite like, not even remotely close, but kind of like what I'm saying is like what United 93 did, where
mm-hmm.
there were moments in United 93, because it's such a damn great film. There were moments in that movie when I actually was rooting for them to get to the, you know, to get to the cockpit and win.
Right.
And you know what I mean? Because I was so caught up in the movie. And then, like, you know, like a few seconds after that thought went into my head, I said, oh, man. You know what I mean? So it was,
yeah.
And this movie, to a certain extent, does that a little bit. And it certainly
mm-hmm.
did it to the audience that I saw it with. So it's recommended, though. I mean, great performances. And you're going to hear a lot about this movie for the next few weeks. Fruitvale Station.
Certainly.
And it's playing in about five area theaters. All right, we got a couple more movies to talk about. Eric, you're going to take care of Red 2 for us, okay?
Will do.
Because I didn't see it. So hang on. There's Eric. And there's Colin. And we got two more movies to talk about, Red 2 and The Conjuring, right here on WGN. It's the Midnight Movie Reviews. We're going to continue. And we're going to talk a little bit about horror movies from 2013 after a little bit later on. I want to talk a little bit about that coming up. And then after 2 o'clock, we will be talking about the Pitchfork Music Festival. Night 1 happened already. We've got Saturday and Sunday schedule that we're going to preview, a full preview and a full review of tonight's performances of the Pitchfork Music Festival. That's all coming up after 2 o'clock. We're here till 5 on WGN. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. All right. Colin and Eric are here. And we are talking about the movies. Okay, Eric, quickly tell us about Red 2. Give us the synopsis, and then after the news, you can give us your review, because Colin and I have not seen it.
Okay. Well, this is the sequel to the sort of surprise word-of-mouth hit from a few years ago, starring Bruce Willis and John Malkovich, amongst others. Red stands for Retired and Extremely Dangerous. They play a group of retired CIA professionals who are sort of whisked back into action. And here in Red 2, it's sometime after the events of the first film. Bruce Willis's character is enjoying his retirement with his new groupie girlfriend, played by Mary Louise Parker, when he finds out that a contract has been put out on his life. He is determined to find out why and exactly what's going on. And this involves his crazy buddy played by John Malkovich, involves one of their old colleagues, Helen Mirren, who was actually given the contract out on his life, and also involves Anthony Hopkins as a sort of a nutso scientist who has been locked up for some part of 3 decades, who has designed some sort of super-powered nuclear device that a lot of people are looking to get their hands on. And everyone is after him, and our heroes are whisked back into action to solve the big mystery and save the day.
Okay, so that's the plot of Red 2, the sequel to Red, and we'll find out what Eric thought of it. And if you want to jump in for the Midnight Movie Reviews, they're going to continue after the news. It's 312-981-7200. Also, Drunks in the News is coming up. It'll be coming up a little bit later on, sponsored by the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn. George and everybody at the Gale Street Inn, they rule. Go there. It's in Jefferson Park. It's awesome. Best food ever. Go to the Gale Street Inn and eat, and we thank them for sponsoring Drunks in the News, which will be coming up later on WGN. News is next. Yes. Midnight Movie Reviews continue with Eric and Colin from eFilmCritic.com, and we are going to review a movie called The Conjuring coming up. All three of us are going to review that, and we're going to talk a little bit about the horror movies that have come out in 2013 as well. Drunks in the News, Straight out of Context, and all that stuff is coming up later in the show. And we want to thank George and everybody at Gale Street Inn for sponsoring Drunks in the News. Very quickly, I want to mention there's a really great event that's going to be happening on Tuesday, July 30th. We'll put a link up on our Facebook page so that you can make reservations. It's me and Patty Vasquez. We're hosting a Bar Talk Radio Night. Patty Vasquez, as you know, one of the funniest women on the planet. She's a great stand-up comedian who headlines in clubs all over the place, works at Zany's a lot here in Chicago, and also hosts, has hosted shows here on WGN on Sunday nights. And she's spectacularly funny, and she's really an amazing woman, very funny. And when she and I get together, it's always a good time. And so we are going to entertain you guys on Tuesday night, July 30th, starting at 6 o'clock at the Gale Street Inn on Milwaukee in Jefferson Park. The restaurant is closed on Tuesdays, but George has special events because he's celebrating the 50th anniversary of Gale Street Inn and wants to give back. And so he's saving Tuesdays now to host these great events to benefit really great charities. And Tuesday night, July 30th, is no different. It is to benefit Autism Speaks. Autism Speaks is a very important charity, and especially to Patty Vasquez, who has a special needs child, and we'll talk about that, and we'll talk about some other fun stuff that will, you know, keep you entertained, and it'll be fun. But we are going to touch on special needs and autism, and all the money that is raised that night, not a dime goes elsewhere. Every single penny raised goes straight to Autism Speaks. We are going to entertain you guys. It's going to be great. We're going to do an hour-long talk and entertain each other, and Patty's very funny, and I always have a great time with her. I'm going to interview her. She's going to interview me, and we're just going to keep it loose and fun. We're going to be in the bar at the Gale Street. There's a limited amount of tickets available. Now, here's the deal. It's $50 to get in. That includes a buffet, which includes salmon and all kinds of stuff, including the legendary ribs at the Gale Street Inn. Great sides, beer and wine, $50. And that includes all the food, all the drinks, and the night with Patty and I entertaining you guys. The whole thing starts at 6 o'clock. You get your buffet, you eat some food, then we move on into the bar, and Patty and I are going to sit up front at the bar and do a show for you. We're going to entertain you. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have some big laughs, and it's going to be great. And again, every single dime goes to Autism Speaks. It's very important. So it's Tuesday, July 30th, $50 for the great buffet, the drinks, and the entertainment with me and Patty. And we're really looking forward to this. George is going to be there. He's going to be your host, and he's awesome. And the Gale Street Inn is just such a great place, and George is doing such a wonderful job giving back to others. And Autism Speaks is going to be the beneficiary of a really great night. We want to raise a ton of money. We want to pack the place. We want to sell the place out. There's a limited amount of tickets available, so make your reservation right now. GaleStreet.com, G-A-L-E Street, GaleStreet.com. You can make your reservations right now. It's going to be an incredibly entertaining night with me and Patty, with awesome food and awesome drink and awesome company, and all the money goes to Autism Speaks. And once again, you can go to GaleStreet.com right now. Make your reservations right now. We want to sell this place out. And there's a limited amount of tickets available, so go right now to GaleStreet.com and do it. We also have a link on our Facebook page if you'd like to check it out, Facebook.com/NickDShow. It's going to be a great night with great food, very entertaining, but also it's going to benefit a really good cause. I hosted one of these, actually the first one that they ever did, Bar Talks Radio Night at the Gale Street Inn with Tony Fitzpatrick, my friend Tony Fitzpatrick, great artist, Renaissance man, actor, writer, awesome dude in general. And we had a huge turnout for that. We raised a ton of money for the Chicago Food Depository, and now we want to raise a ton of money for Autism Speaks. It's a very important charity, especially to Patty, and we are going to have a great night that night. So me, Patty Vasquez, entertainment, great food, great drinks, $50, which is a bargain. All the money goes to Autism Speaks. It's Tuesday, July 30th at 6 p.m., Gale Street Inn. Tuesday, July 30th, 6 p.m., Gale Street Inn. Go to GaleStreet.com right now. Make your reservations. Come out and say hi. We're going to hang out and take pictures and shake hands and talk. And just generally, Patty and I are going to entertain the hell out of you guys while you have great food and drink and while we benefit an incredible cause in Autism Speaks. So GaleStreet.com to make your reservations right now for Tuesday, July 30th, 6 o'clock at Gale Street Inn. It's going to be a great night. And I want to thank Gale Street Inn for sponsoring Drunks in the News, which we will get to in a little bit. Okay, Colin and Eric, we're back, sir.
Hello.
All righty then. So, hello. Eric, you told us all about the plot to Red 2, and
yes,
I have to say, you know, before you give it your review,
mm-hmm.
I could not believe that they actually made a sequel to this movie.
I don't think any of us can.
Yeah, I was stunned when I heard that there was a sequel to Red coming out, and.
It's one of the most baffling movies that's been released over the last few years, because when that movie got screened in Chicago, everyone in Chicago hated it. All of our colleagues, all of our inner circle, all of us said, wow, that is crap.
It is.
Absolute crap.
Yeah.
And yet, somehow, you know, even before it became sort of this little word of mouth hit in theaters, even there were even critics across the country that were kind of giving it a pass and said, oh, that was kind of fun and whatnot. And I don't understand where, none of us understand where they were coming from. And I'd be actually kind of shocked if anyone who saw that movie has even given it a single thought since.
Yeah.
I'd be shocked if anyone even bought a DVD. I'd be shocked if anyone even remembers they saw it.
Well, that's the thing. When the advertisements for Red 2 started to come out, I was like, oh, yeah, there was a movie called Red.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So,
there's been a few. And, you know, this is not a sequel to the Kozlowski film. This is not even a sequel to the other Brian Cox film called Red.
Right.
Because Brian Cox was in this other Red 2. And now he's in Red 2 as well. But to make it a very quick review, it sucks. You know, and I'll expand further. But you know, when this movie started, like the first 15 minutes, I was thinking like, okay, this is, you know, I don't really like any of these characters. I actually really kind of despise Mary Louise Parker in these movies. Few characters have come off as so aggressively off-putting as the way that character is written and the way she plays it. So seeing more of her was not a good thing. But at least this movie seemed to be having sort of a quick pace to it. And I thought, like, oh, maybe this thing's going to be over in like 85 minutes at least. But then the movie really kind of slows itself down. It actually thinks it's, you know, reinventing the wheels of, you know, spy plotting and whatnot. And the way the screenplay is put together, there are twist upon twist upon double reversals and triple reversals, and I don't think that the screenwriters even realized that they were twists. There are things that just sort of happen in this movie, and they're sort of nonchalant. And then they have John Malkovich, who I think they just turn the camera on every once in a while, and he kind of has this look on his face, like oh, you're on me now. Oh, you want me to do something wacky? And then he kind of does some sort of variation on some line reading, and there's no consistency. There's nothing funny about Malkovich in either of these movies. And they've added Catherine Zeta-Jones to this, who is completely wasted and completely not believable as a foe to Bruce Willis or as a Russian spy or all the various reversals that her character goes through in the film. I mean, the big reversal in the film is actually spoiled in the TV commercials, for one. But no, this is an absolutely horrible movie that just is never ending, and it's not funny, it is not exciting, and it was directed by Dean Pariseau, who so wonderfully did Galaxy Quest so many years ago.
Yeah.
You can talk about two films, one film that has a complete grasp of the tone that it wants to set, where it's a satire and a parody, but also kind of believes in the material. You know, that's the kind of thing that Red, this series needs, and he can't bring it to the thing. I mean, the film is so uninspired that you actually have Brian Cox and Anthony Hopkins in the cast, and no one can figure out a way to get them together in a scene. You know, this is one of the worst films of the summer.
Okay.
And of the year.
All right, Red 2, terrible. All right, Colin.
Yep.
Can you please tell us about The Conjuring?
Yes. Well, this based on true events, as the poster says, about a family named the Perrones with Ron Livingston and Lily Taylor as the parents of, I think, five young girls.
Yep.
Yeah, they move into a new house in Rhode Island, and the movie has a typical haunted house movie setup, you know, where the move-in is simple, but then creepy things start to happen. Secret passageways are found to the basement. Invisible forces are at work making noises and moving things around in the middle of the night. And it just gets a little more intense with each passing night. Finally, the family finds a pair of paranormal specialists who come and look at their house in the hopes of driving these evil forces away. They hire the Warrens, played by Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga, who are married and who also have a daughter and who are pretty well known for dabbling in this ghostly hobby, to quote Poltergeist. They're strong-willed partners who know exactly how to handle this, and they handle it in equal amounts, which is one of the very many nice twists in this film, at least the twist on the genre. This is a story told very well, mainly because the characters are so relatable and likable, and the movie never falls into the usual trappings where one person hears noises and nobody believes them. So there's no time wasted here. Every character is on the same page, which makes it very refreshing. The film is, most importantly, also very creepy and deserves to be seen on a big screen in a dark theater, which is the only real way to watch a good haunted house movie. James Wan knows exactly how to time the scares and to get the audience on the side, not just to get the audience to jump, but also get the audience on the side of the victims instead of rooting against them because of stupidity. You're not sitting there going, "Oh, you idiot, what'd you do that for?" Or don't go in there. I will say that the first half of the movie, I think, is a little bit repetitive with how often Juan wants to make the audience jump. That there was a stretch where I felt like I was just too far ahead of him and was getting a little antsy, getting a little, you know, feeling a little ready for some real mayhem instead of the usual, you know, boo moments. But once the mayhem starts, this movie is unstoppable. I got actual chills in the second half of this film, especially particularly the last 20 minutes, where Lily Taylor pretty much does the best work she's done in years. You know, I've said many times before on this show that I'm a sucker for a good haunted house movie, and this movie is a good reason why. It's a lot of fun being scared during a haunted house movie, which I was. And we've had a lot of good, I think we've had a fairly good number of, you know, good haunted house movies over the last decade or so. And this is the best one I've seen since The Others. So definitely a high recommendation.
All right. Eric.
Yeah, this is my favorite film of the summer, favorite big movie of the summer. And everything Colin said is correct. I didn't really have a problem with the setup of the movie. I love what I really loved about that section was the sort of the getting to know the characters. You know, I was, you know, while the scares were happening, we're sort of getting to know this family. And like Colin said, the characters are all so likable. And the real refreshing thing about this film, as opposed to a lot of the sort of ghost stories and exorcist tales that we've been getting kind of ad nauseum over the years, especially like the Paranormal Activity crap fest that we've been getting, is that this film actually has sort of a real emotional attachment to it. There's a real emotional connection to these characters. So by the end, when everything is, you know, all the bad stuff is happening, we really do are sort of rooting for them against the ghost. I love the fact that the characters played by Wilson and Formiga are, they're true believers, but at the same time, they're not, you know, above being skeptics when, you know, the truth is actually called for. They're not scam artists. At least they don't, you know, they certainly don't believe they are. And I like that aspect of it. I love the fact that the film is not, you know, going for sort of a winking aspect at the audience. The film, while it does have laughs, they're done at the expense of the likability of the characters. You know, there's a lot of great nervous laughter in the film. And by the time you get to the end, man, the last, you know, 20 minutes of this movie is pretty spectacular. And I love the fact that the film really sort of plays fair with the audience. It does, you know, it sort of sets up the rules. It establishes how things are happening. It allows the sort of the mystery to unfold. And it doesn't sort of resort to the sort of the cheapness that often comes with horror films of this type, particularly in sort of the final sort of moment of the film, that, you know, where evil is not quite defeated, and so leaving room for a sequel. Yeah, this is absolutely my favorite film this summer, and I echo Colin's sentiment that it's the best ghost story since The Others.
This is a great movie, man. I saw it tonight, and James Wan directed the hell out of this movie.
This is a terrific
Horror movie. This is beautifully staged. It is the build up is spectacular. I was fine with the beginning of the film, Colin. It didn't bother me at all. In fact, I was, you know, I thought a lot of the setups were clever, and they were varying enough for me not to get antsy or anything. And well, again, as you mentioned, what grounds this movie are the characters. There are some actual three-dimensional characters in this movie, where most of these haunted house movies, you don't know who the hell the people are. You don't care. You know what I mean? And, you know, and like these paranormal activity movies where you just it's like a, you know, a static shot and then a door opens or, you know, something flashes in the background. But you don't know who the people are. You don't care. Here you actually care about the people. You care about the, you know, the main characters, the family. You also care about the couple and their daughter. And, you know, there's a beautiful setup at the beginning of the movie. One of the things I love about this movie is that it seems like that the writers, which it's astounding to me that these guys, looking at their credits, you know, they wrote The Reaping and a couple of other really forgettable films, wrote this screenplay because it's a really pretty terrific screenplay. But it seemed to me like it was like this. The idea was to like do a grab bag of all horror movies and throw them into one, because the movie opens with the movie opens with Creepy Doll, mm-hmm. you know, and then it's Haunted House movie. And then it's exorcism movie, and they all kind of come together, but done in a way that like is really that the build up. It's also like a here's another thing I wanted to mention really quickly. There are some really great scares in this movie, that break the mold, the cliches that you normally see in haunted house movies, meaning that there are a lot of really great scary. Edge of your seat moments when all the lights are on and there are like a ton of people in the house. Do you know what I mean? As opposed to most of the time, it's someone creeping around in a dark hallway by themselves. And they've got that in this movie too, you know?
Yeah.
But like, there are some great moments where you're like, what the hell's going on? And it's like, there's 8 people, 10 people in the house. You know what I mean? And half the lights are on. They got cameras taking pictures. And even in that regard, Juan gets some really scary moments out of the movie.
Well, isn't it so refreshing that, like, every time someone goes to investigate something, the first thing you do is turn on a light?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
It's great.
I love that. Now, can I ask this? Is hide and clap a real thing?
I don't know.
I don't know either, but I like that game. I mean, you know, you might bust your shin on a coffee table a couple of times playing it, but I mean, that's a beautiful setup too. Like if that was just the screenwriter's invention, it's a beautiful invention. You know, yeah. I mean, there are some really beautiful, scary moments that derive just from that game. You know,
mm-hmm.
There's a moment where Lily Taylor is playing it with her daughter and she walks into the wrong room and there's this awesome moment that happens, man.
Yes.
And the buildup is spectacular. And I'm so glad, Eric, that you mentioned it was Colin, I think, who mentioned how great Lily Taylor is in this. A tremendous actress, a great actress who we don't, you know, hear from enough, in my opinion. And she does phenomenal work in this movie. A really great emotional work and just, you know, grounding the character in reality and then doing really amazing, scary physical work, too. They put her through a lot. It reminded me a little bit of what Jane Levy had to go through in Evil Dead earlier this year. You know what I mean? Like the physical stuff that they have to go through in this film. Terrific stuff. I think it's James Wan's definitely his best movie. I'm a big fan of the Death Sentence a lot, but this, I think, is his best movie. And I didn't like Insidious very much. I wasn't a huge fan. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, he's got Insidious 2 coming out this year.
Yeah, they of course showed the trailer right before this tonight. and does he have a deal where Patrick Wilson is only going to star now in horror movies? Is that the deal now? Is that what's going on? So anyway, I think it's terrific. And I wanted to mention, I just wanted to fly down a list here because I really think 2013 is turning out to be a really good year for horror movies. And you know, I mean, after a lot of dry years, you don't get a lot of years where really good horror films have come out. But I think it's been an exceptionally solid year for horror films. And we've had duds: the Texas Chainsaw Movie, the Lords of Salem, the Last Exorcism Part Two. But let me just fly down the lists of, I mean, things that can fall under the category of horror. Okay,
mm-hmm.
John Dies at the End, Hansel and Gretel, Mama, which was terrific. Warm Bodies, which was great. Dark Skies, which was solid. ABCs of Death. ABCs of Death. Stoker, which, not necessarily a horror movie, but could fall into that category. Evil Dead, which I loved. I know you guys didn't care for it very much. Antiviral. American Mary. Maniac. We've got Your Next, VHS 2, and The Conjuring. And these were all, like, really good things. And coming up, is All the Boys Love Mandy Lane, which is coming up in October. So
there's a film that's just coming out on DVD now that I've reviewed called Would You Rather.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Brittany Snow and Jeffrey Combs. Right. Really a lot of fun.
Yeah. Now, Colin, anything? Are there some horror movies that you are digging this year?
Well, yeah, you know, it's funny you mention this because tonight I finally caught up with two of those movies that I hadn't seen yet. That was on your mid-year top 10 list.
So okay.
Tonight I caught up with American Mary and Evil Dead.
And what did you think?
And I love American Mary.
Yeah.
that's a nice, creepy little number
yep.
here.
Yep.
Both movies have tongue splitting in them.
Yes, they do.
So it was a good night to watch people getting their tongues split.
Yes, they do.
That was nice. Yeah.
Did you like Evil Dead?
Mostly the last 20 minutes.
Yeah.
The first, you know, hour or so didn't really, I mean, I thought, you know, there's a very effective, gore and makeup effects in it. But I thought the movie, it was just kind of, I don't know, just didn't do it for me. But the last 20 minutes I thought were pretty amazing.
And what did you think of Jane Levy?
Oh, she's terrific.
Isn't she great?
She's absolutely terrific.
She's absolutely.
I think horror. I think acting in horror movies goes, you know, woofully, undervalued.
I agree.
It's a really hard thing to act scared.
I agree. I totally agree.
And it's not appreciated enough.
I agree. And let me just say this. Well. Jane Levy, one of my favorite performances of the year, actually, and not just Lily Taylor, who probably is the standout in the film. Everybody in The Conjuring is great. All the little girls are mm-hmm. awesome. Everybody is good. They're all convincingly scared. There's nothing funny about it. Even though it's completely ludicrous, a lot of it is ludicrous, you know, but you believe it. Juan sets up this tone where it's like, this is real. This is happening. And I think they did a great job with it. It's a terrific movie, and add it to the list of really good horror films of the year. I had a great time with The Conjuring, just a really terrific movie. And I can't wait to see it again. I thought it was great. What do we got next week, Eric? Yeah, go ahead.
What do we got? I was going to say, about The Conjuring, do you think it should have been rated R?
Yeah. It's
really?
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, it's really intense, you know? I mean, it's rated R because it's pretty intense. I mean, there's stuff mm-hmm. in it. There's stuff in it where you could get away with a PG-13, but I wouldn't take – I mean, there's a lot of stuff in this movie that would scare the hell out of people. You know? I don't know.
I don't know. I'd take a two-year-old, but that's
yeah.
just me.
Well, but what I'm saying is, I don't know. For me, there's more cred because it's rated R. That's just me.
Okay. Okay.
All right, what do we got next week, real quick?
We got The Wolverine.
All right. Well, there you go. All right, Colin, Eric, thank you guys so much.
Thanks, man.
All right, take care. There you go. All right, there's Colin, there's Eric, and they will help us out next week as well for the Midnight Movie Reviews.